I Hate Politics is a podcast dedicated to exploring a human activity we love to hate. We look at human life, culture, economics closest to us, in our neighborhoods, workplaces, schools and streets, and in our local governments. Together, we'll explore how politics is central to getting things done in societies where we treasure diverse views and preferences. I'm Sunil Dasgupta. I've spent my life studying politics, and I know this. Unless we want to live in a dictatorship or a monarchy, we are stuck with politics. Politics is more than just Trump, Biden, or elections. It's how we fix potholes, make our streets safer, where we put our schools, and decide who goes to them. It's about coming together as a community. It's about us. Let's go find those stories. In this episode, we talked to two vaccine hunters, Tanya Aguilar and Becky Taylor, both Montgomery County school teachers who stepped into the breach left by pre-existing disparities in public health and a puzzling lack of coordination between different levels of government and between different agencies. As if the authorities did not have months of pandemic time to prepare for the coming vaccine. It's just the kind of thing that makes people go, ugh, to hate politics. The vaccine hunters have filled a need so widespread that they were featured on 60 Minutes within a few weeks of starting their work. While what they do has been incredible, over 1,000 vaccine appointments secured for people that were struggling to find a shot. The thing I wanted to understand from them was how they came to the problem, what it looked like from the front lines of America's and Montgomery County's quest for COVID vaccinations, and what they thought about the solution. Maryland and its richest county, Montgomery, appear to be befuddled by their inability to address vaccine equity. According to a New York Times story, Maryland ranks at the bottom of the nation in percentage of minority population vaccinated. The stark disparities led Erin Reed, another Montgomery County resident, to start Maryland Equity Vaccine Hunters.
So I started the Vaccine Equity Hunters of Maryland because I had noticed very early on in my own vaccine searching process that equitable distribution under the current system of obtaining vaccines in Maryland is impossible. What you have are multiple corporations that are releasing appointments on a first-come, first-served basis online. As a result, the only people able to get these appointments are people who are technologically fluent, who are English literate, who have spare time and resources to sit in front of multiple devices all day long. As a result, I took some of the best vaccine hunters from some of the various Facebook pages and created our own page. And instead, we seek to use these skills to obtain vaccines solely for immigrant community, Black and Indigenous people of color, disabled people, and LGBTQ people. As a result, we've gotten over 300 vaccines for people, and we're gaining every day.
When you hear my interview with vaccine hunters, keep a lookout for something called PrepMod, which is an online form used for many years by Maryland and many other states to register for all kinds of vaccine shots, including for the ones kids routinely get. This is a 6-page online form meant for younger parents now being used for a population that was over 75 years old. This wasn't just a supply problem. But if you hear political leaders, public health leaders, they focus on supply and almost exclusively on supply. But first, the news roundup. The Congress passed the mammoth $1.9 trillion COVID bill, and President Biden signed it. There is $350 billion for state and local governments, $130 billion for schools, $10 billion for infrastructure projects. A bigger infrastructure bill is in the works. We criticize trickle-down market economics, but it will be interesting to see how this money arrives in classrooms, in our streets and transit systems, and in our neighborhood. Will it help maintain service levels? Montgomery County is getting over $200 million, Rockville City, $50 million, and even Poolsville gets $5 million. In the Maryland General Assembly, the House of Delegates passed a bill that would require school districts in the state to report on their composition of energy use and set goals for moving to renewable sources. The bill goes to the Senate. Montgomery County Public Schools is the biggest energy user in the county. The Police Reform and Accountability Bill, however, is being hotly debated. The bill is an omnibus effort by the Democratic majority to bring wide-ranging reform to law enforcement agencies in the state. There are companion bills that seek to remove police officers from schools and allocate the money spent on them to school counselors. We will be bringing an entire episode on school resource officers or police officers that are assigned to schools next week. MCPS announced that Monifa McKnight will serve as the interim superintendent after Jack Smith when he departs in June. Dr. McKnight is currently the deputy superintendent. The MCPS superintendent is one of the most high-profile government and, I dare say, political appointments in Montgomery County, with visibility that rivals the county executive. In small politics, another case of the ARG. In Montgomery County, the pandemic led many communities to reclaim streets for non-automobile use, particularly in the down-county areas of Silver Spring and Bethesda. In South Silver Spring, a section of Newell Street was closed to traffic and became the stomping grounds for toddlers and skateboarders. But one fine day, South Silver Spring resident Paul Meyer found that half the street was covered by a tent. Is the closed-off Newell Street used a lot?
It was used a lot. It just a tiny bit of background. It was a collaboration between MCDOT, the Department of Transportation, Parks, and the County Council. Mm-hmm. To get this space closed off to be used by kids and also adults who can also drink there openly.
Oh,
thank you, Parks. Yeah, you can drink alcohol. So it got a ton of use.
Okay. And what happened?
What happened was another government agency, without telling anyone ahead of time, put in a huge heated tent that takes up more than half the space.
To what end?
Their idea is that people would use it to eat food from restaurants, but people were already doing that.
What agency is this?
It is the Silver Spring Urban District, which organizes things for the Central Business District, but mainly the downtown area, not this neighborhood.
And what's the consequence of the tent?
The consequence of the tent is that no one is using the space anymore because they didn't try to figure out how the space was used. They just did it.
Do you have a theory for why this happened?
Just think it was multiple government agencies not communicating with each other, even though they are all part of the Montgomery County government.
And have you talked to them?
I mean, you know, I've registered my concern.
So one of the frustrations people have with politics, and sort of that's how we get our name for the podcast, is this coordination problem that left hand doesn't know what right hand is doing.
Absolutely.
So where is the solution? I mean, where do you think the solution lies?
I think the solution is probably that people keep registering their concern. Because if enough people make their voices heard, I have a strong feeling that the tent is eventually going to go away.
Paul's concern did register. The tent is going away. In late developing news, the Regional Services Director for Silver Spring, Riamberto Rodriguez, also known as the mayor of Silver Spring, has said that the tent will come down. This one worked out. I'll be back with Becky Taylor and Tanya Aguilar. Tanya Aguilar, Becky Taylor, welcome to I Hate Politics.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
Well, first of all, congratulations on appearing in 60 Minutes. You're doing incredible work, the vaccine hunters are, in Montgomery County. Can you tell us where and how this all began? Tanya, you want to take it?
Sure, I would love to. So Sunil, let me picture this. 5 weeks ago, I was sitting in my car coming out of some organization store getting a planner, and I get a phone call from a wonderful friend, Maisie Lynch, and she proposes something to me and says, hey, I know you got your vaccine. I've been seeing you, you know, you putting stuff on your Facebook. How do you think, what do you think about helping make a couple appointments for some seniors and maybe monitor a vaccine site, you know, no big deal. Sure, I would love to. I would welcome that opportunity. The seven other women who were going to also be involved, I knew them. We had met, you know, as acquaintances, more maybe a couple more friends, but the rest like acquaintances, because over the summer with COVID, we started a group called the Kayak Mamas. And so, yes, we did. And so we would get on the water and socially distance ourselves and get out of the house. And we were having a grand old time. So we bonded over that. A few of the ladies of the eight also were close friends, because for the pandemic, they were making masks. And so three of them were mask makers. And so they knew each other from that. And so we all kind of knew each other a little bits, you know, some of us overlapped, some of us didn't. But we're all go-getters. We're all educators from Montgomery County. We're all go-getters. That was the unifying force. And so, you know, I said, sure, why not? Well, you know, close to 5 weeks later, and 1,000 plus appointments later, we are the vaccine hunters, Las Casa Vacunas, really focusing on securing, helping, advocating for the underserved, the underrepresented people of Montgomery County who are seeking out vaccines. And that includes our 75 plus population, our seniors who are at most vulnerable, and definitely our Black and Brown community that we have taken as a serious priority in our mission.
Well, that's great, incredible, from kayak mamas and mask makers to vaccine hunters. Can I ask, what do you teach, Tanya and Becky?
Well, I'm a Spanish teacher at Sherwood High School.
Becky, what do you teach?
I teach social studies at Sherwood High School. So Tanya and I are colleagues there at the high school.
That's interesting. So is all seven of you from Sherwood High School?
There are four of us that are at Sherwood High School, and then the other four are teachers at a variety of other schools in Montgomery County, but we are all Montgomery County Public Schools teachers.
And Sunil, three of us on the Vaccine Hunters are Spanish teachers, and one of us is a state-certified translator. So we definitely represent our Spanish-speaking community in a very strong way.
Well, and since you brought this up, let me ask you directly about that. So there is an equity problem in the way that we are vaccinating in Maryland, in Montgomery County. What are you seeing? Where are we falling behind?
In our experience and what we have seen, we're coming across the public health crisis that existed prior to the COVID crisis.
Correct.
And that is just coming together in a perfect storm, that is what we see right now. There were breaks, there were gaps, there were failures in our public health system prior to all of this. There was lack of access to healthcare among the Black and Brown community. Now we're taking that crisis and we are placing it on to what is the COVID vaccine rollout. And so that crisis that we're seeing is lack of accessibility to the basic, you know, online forms. There's lack of technology. There's a digital divide. There is Spanish translation, and not only Spanish, but in Montgomery County, what is it, Becky? I think 36 languages that are spoken in Montgomery County. Spanish is brought up because that is the larger language most prevalent.
Right.
But there are 30.
Any Montgomery County publication that comes from the schools, it's translated into a whole litany of different languages.
Yes.
Because we have so many people that speak so many different languages in our community. And that's one of the things that I have always felt makes Montgomery County the diversity and the richness of our community is one of the things that I love most about Montgomery County. but that's just being completely ignored by the public health sector. So if anything is translated, and not everything is, but if it is, it's translated from English into Spanish and often not well, is my understanding. Okay. But in Montgomery County Public Schools, we translate things into all those different languages and then some. And so that's a real failing. Just the language outreach is a true failing in this public health system.
Can you speak to the government failure that the vaccine hunters stepped into to fill the breach?
At the beginning, what we saw when we first started back on January 24th mm-hmm. is we saw that it was so difficult to get an appointment. Just securing that valuable appointment to be able to get the shot in your arm was incredibly, incredibly difficult. Initially, it was our 75 and over were having a lot of trouble getting appointments made. And when I look at it, for example, my mom, I love her to death. She lives at Leisure World just down the street from me, right? But she will come over to my house and she'll say regularly, "Hey, Becky, my phone isn't ringing anymore and it just vibrates and I'd love it to be able to ring. Do you know how to fix it?" And I'm like, "Mom, it's an iPhone. You just flip that little lever on the side, right?" Like, but just that small thing it just doesn't stick with her. And technology isn't something she ever had to use in her life, really, significantly. Right. Additionally, we have another vaccine hunter, another Tanya, not Tanya Aguilar, but Tanya Perez Fuentes. And she has a mother that has rheumatoid arthritis. Mm-hmm. And so navigating a mouse to click little buttons that say, "No, I'm not pregnant. No, I'm not breastfeeding. No, I haven't had a COVID vaccine before." They had these tiny little buttons on the prep mod that you'd have to navigate to. And then those appointments would go like this.
So the people that made the form for older folks didn't test it out with older folks.
Well, they didn't, and it wasn't necessarily made for this. This is where we're coming in here, really advocating for accessibility, because correct. When you are making something accessible, you need to consider the broad public that you are trying to reach, right? You can't just make one form and expect the form to serve all purposes, right? Or if you do, then you need to have tested it. You need to have made sure that it can reach the broad public that you're trying to reach. And so this form was put out, and we don't know of any testing per se, any practice that was done mm-hmm. For this form, the efficacy of this form. So it was just put out there, and hey, you know, you Sunil, figure it out. Like, this is what you have. You figure it out. Not they weren't trying to meet your needs. You needed, as the person trying to register, needed to somehow figure out what the form was asking.
So there were those physical aspects of filling in the form, but then they only have that form in English or Spanish. And so since we have vaccine hunters that are fluent in Spanish, there's 8 of us in the vaccine hunter group, and 4 of us are fluent in Spanish, not me. But Tanya, I think maybe you want to explain some of the language.
Definitely. So as we were going through and helping everyone, mm-hmm. I wasn't using the Spanish version, because if you switch over to the Spanish version, that slows you down because you have to actually go in to select Spanish, right? Mm-hmm. And we knew that this was a race to the finish. So I was not about to select another option that would slow me down. I know English, so I was gonna go right. If it pops up in English, I was gonna go right. If had it popped up in Spanish, then I would have gone through it in Spanish, but it pops up in English, I would go right through it. But then as we were getting a bit more professional, or more expertise right. was being gained with these forms. Right. At one point, we just happened to come across the Spanish one. And we were all, when I say we, the Spanish teachers in the group and the translator, we were taken aback. We were floored. We were horrified. I can just add more and more adjectives.
Sure.
At what the translation looked like, Sunil. Oh, this no. translation looked like a Spanish 2 project gone wrong, like a seventh grade middle schooler trying to do the best they can, because they are trying to do the best they can, but you know, you're going to find errors as a teacher, you find errors. So for example, the word for back, like to go return, to go back one page, in English it's back. In Spanish, you have many, you have a couple options. You can go back, like, you know, go back to the beginning, or your physical back of your body. Well, PrepMod chose to use the physical back part, the body part of a human being as return.
Okay. So here's the question, right? It's not as if they didn't have almost a year to prep for this.
So
PrepMod is the form that the state of Maryland developed and that all the counties were supposed to use, right?
I think it's used in a bunch of different states, though. It's in 20 different states, PrepMod. Yeah.
Well, so
it's not just a Maryland form.
It's not just a Maryland form, and it wasn't just used for the COVID vaccine. PrepMod has been used by our county, by neighboring counties and other states for vaccine in general. So when you want to register your children for their vaccines before school begins, et cetera, if you need other types of vaccines,
They use it for flu vaccines.
Yeah.
They use it to register if you want to get a flu vaccine for the state. So now they've taken this thing that was used just in a small amount. It was never really intended to be used in this large scale that we're now using it in to try to get all of 20 different states registered, right? So millions of people now are trying to log on to this system that was not created for this purpose.
Right.
And so, you know, there are multiple failures in vaccinations. So, you know, right from the President Trump, you know, and the failure to recognize the problem, once the vaccines became available, the lack of planning effort at the federal level.
Got it.
You know, then the state had some failures. And of course, the county has failures, right? So everybody essentially is playing hot potato with this, right? No, it's the feds. No, it's the state. No, it's the county. And where, from your vantage point, where could we have fixed the problem? Or at least, where does some of this responsibility lie?
So we started talking from the beginning that a lot of times when we were going into these meetings and talking with the Department of Health and Human Services and people on county council and other leaders, people in Annapolis as well. And as we were talking to people, we would get off and we'd always have a debrief meeting, right? We'd have these meetings and we'd talk beforehand. This is what we want to focus on. We'd have our meeting. And then we'd have a debrief as a group afterwards. Right. And we often said that what it felt as if people were saying is, hey, you're right, there's all these problems, but they always wanted to use the supply chain as their excuse, right? And that a lot of people seemed to just want to be like, let's just pass the buck down the line until we have more vaccine, because then people won't care about all these other problems again.
Right.
And we'll just be able to get the vaccine to everyone through Walgreens and CVS and all these other locations. Right. And then we can hide all these public health problems that have always been there. Let's forget, we don't need to fix all that. Why fix it, Sunil? The idea seemed as if they were just trying to kick the can until that supply chain. And as soon as Johnson & Johnson rolled out, which thank God it has. However, there's going to be a lot of hiding of equity issues at this point. I fear if the government gets its way, because why solve the problem within the problem if we can just get those vaccines out?
So we have had 5 weeks, Anil, to see how systemic racism completely works. I can't. Because yes. if we saw how those, in those 5 weeks, the disparity, we see the statistics that we don't have. I mean, they're right in front of us. We see that whites were able to access this vaccine in a way that Black and Brown residents of Montgomery County and across the nation were not able to access. So those questions are right in front of our face. The answers are right in front of our face as well. And those questions and those answers can be applied across so many other public health issues, education, the job force. I mean, so many things. And so these questions are not new. They're not new questions. And the answers are not new answers either. They just have not been implemented, and people turn a blind eye, and the next crisis comes up, and then the next issue comes up, and then we find things to get distracted on, and we find other things to talk about. But the questions and the answers are the same and the same and the same. Who knew that if you open up a clinic, you might need some wheelchairs to help the elderly get into the building? Who knew that if you have a clinic, that the elderly might not be able to get out of their house because they're homebound, they're shut-ins, so that they can't go to the vaccine. The vaccine has to come to them. Who knew that people don't have internet, that some people don't have a computer, that many people don't have an email address, yet an email address is required for every single appointment created. So when we were at a county site, and I'm not going to say which one, but when I just was playing the devil's advocate, and we were going to give this individual our vaccinehunters@gmail.com so that they could have an email so that they could get the notification. So that there wasn't an issue, but I just was trying to push the envelope there a little bit and said, well, this person doesn't have an email address. So what are they supposed to do? Well, I'll let them sit over here. I mean, go to the side and tell them to call everybody and anybody they know. Somebody has to have an email address. That's the answer? Somebody has to have an email address? Oh, well, what if that somebody doesn't get the email notification back to you? Like you could be a nephew who's working all day or.
And now that you have taken all these complaints to, I assume, the Department of Health and Human Services, which, by the way, it's noteworthy to say, are led by two African-American doctors, gives more credence to the idea that so much of this is systemic rather than individual-based, right?
In our conversations with Dr. Crowell, it was very clear that if it were up to him, things would happen, you know, with a snap of a finger or a stroke of a pen. But when you're working in politics, and you know, the title of your podcast is I Hate Politics, but when you're working with politics, the amount of fire red tape that you have to get through is incredible. We would sit in meetings, and it was a meeting to set up another meeting that would then set up another meeting.
I've been
that
there.
Then would go into committee. That would set up another meeting.
Can I just add on to that a little bit? Like, I felt as if when we had meetings with Dr. Crowell, there were times that we would be talking with him and he had a litany of other people on the call with us that mm-hmm. were part of his staff, mm-hmm. and he'd want them to hear what we had to say to be able to respond and be able to take notes on what we were saying.
Right.
And sometimes they would try to cut us off. There were a few times they would be like, no, we want to tell you why you're wrong about that. And they wanted to try to tell us that what our experiences we'd had were inaccurate. Dr. Crowell, to his, as a sign of his leadership, he would often say, no, you need to let them speak. And I could tell sometimes, and he would indicate sometimes that he was trying to say some of the same things that we were, but sometimes I got the sense sometimes his staff needed to hear it from a different voice, that maybe these are systemic problems and maybe it's not just him that is saying it's a problem. Maybe other people are too. And when we've reached out to other politicians, they have said, yeah, we need you to keep saying these things because we've been saying it for years and you're coming in with some fresh breath. Just having more vaccines is not going to solve it. Like, it'll hide it for a while, but it's not going to solve these problems.
So Neil, look at these mass vac sites, right? We're a big proponent of a mass vac site in Montgomery County. We have the highest, we have the densest population. We have, you know, like I said, 36 languages. Mm-hmm. Four of our cities in Montgomery County are the most diverse in our nation. And so we have seen in the statistics that with these mass vac sites in Baltimore County, multiple ones in Baltimore County, in the Bowie area, where you have a large presence of people of color. What's the percentage of their own people of color, our own people of color getting vaccinated? It's dismal. Why? Because it's not, because it's the system. The system is not fair. It's not equitable.
Okay, so what are the immediate changes you're seeking?
We had a client of ours that had an unfortunate situation that it was clear that from our perspective, it appeared as if she was not getting a vaccine because of being undocumented.
County is not included?
County as well. Yeah. Okay. Let's say our local, state, and federal, and national.
Anybody that, and everybody that will listen to us.
Anybody that will listen and has the power to do something. And you know what? And let's say our business partners as well, because our business partners, the CVS, the Giants, the Rite Aids, the Walgreens, they're also administering these vaccines.
You're a citizen or a resident, and a virus does not know who it's going to. When this happened, we have come up with a few things that we have seen that we really want to make sure that we are trying to advocate for.
There's three things that we're asking for. For equitable action. The first one is there needs to be clear on-site signage that says no ID requirement, no insurance requirement, and no proof of citizenship. It needs to be available in multiple languages. If there's clear signage that is a requirement, just like we have it for our places of employment, where you have to post what is the minimum wage and what are the OSHA laws and stuff, like, you know, all that. And they can point to it in their language and say, I'm sorry, I'm not leaving. It says right here that you cannot require citizenship. You cannot require my insurance.
And then our second ask is that there should be an equity hotline. And that equity hotline, and this is what we're saying specifically, create an equity multilingual hotline specifically for those being denied vaccines. The hotline number should be on all of the on-site signage. It would provide access to responders that are multilingual and be able to de-escalate a situation. And so the idea then is if you go in and you're being told, no, you need to have an ID, you can point to the sign. If that doesn't work, because we all know that with systemic racism, there are times when people are like, we're not going to listen to you because you're speaking Spanish and I don't speak Spanish, so I don't need to listen to you. Or you're speaking another language and we're going to diminish you as a person for that. If somebody's able to pick up a phone, dial a number that's right there on the wall, dial a number, get somebody that speaks their same language that can then tell that pharmacy, you need to provide this life-saving vaccine to everybody, right? Like, and if somebody is being, if there's some specific pharmacist or some specific location that is getting too many calls, then we know that this person or this agency, this business or whomever is not following the law.
Finally, our third thing is these websites of the clinics, they need to be clear. They need to be accessible. The information that is on these sites, it needs to be standardized. It needs to be something that can be easily read, easily understood. If group 1A, 1B, and 1C are open, and we know that underneath 1A is health workers, under B there's teachers, under C is 65 plus. Why is it that when I go to CVS's site, their list of who's eligible for 1C, sometimes, you know, it says, you know, this person is et cetera. Well, what's the et cetera? And then the other site has it more like there's a lot more bullets. And another site just gives like a very basic, you know, basic name for something.
So the problems you bring up and the asks you have center around a problem of coordination between levels of government, between the agencies of government. I have been flummoxed by why the hospitals in Montgomery County that got state allocations did not remain within the county's priorities. I mean, was there no relationship there in place? What was the reason why the hospitals chose to go a different way than the county priorities. Do you have any insight into that?
There was this idea, oh, we'll have the vaccine and everything will be fine. But I really, again, it all goes back to the fact that our public health system, along with so many other systems in our society, have these systemic problems, right? Like, we don't have, our public health system was not being funded at the level that it needed to be pre-pandemic. Our pandemic, you know, programs that President Obama had put into place had been dismantled during the Trump administration, right? So then we get a pandemic and we're caught off guard. Then we start having this warp speed to get the vaccine, but there's no real talk about, well, now how will we get that vaccine into arms? Like, the breakdown in our government is something that, you know, has always been an issue, but, you know, my personal opinion is it was exaggerated and became a bigger issue in these last 4 years. Additionally, if you look at the news over these last 4 years, the last administration did not care about the Black and Brown communities at the level that they should have.
Sure.
And I mean,
the question is, do we do it now?
I think that's yet to be seen, right?
Silence. I mean, it's too baby. Like, we're too baby in the we're in the baby steps of a new administration, and the policies that were shared, or the ideas that were shared during the campaign, were ones that you know, many progressive individuals, you know, latched onto and definitely can rally around, right, and support in every way. But we still are early on in this new administration. Speaking to your issue, I mean, if anything, we just see it on a constant basis, that lack of coordination, where one hand doesn't know what the other hand is doing, what the other leg is doing, and they're just, you know, we have sit in so many council meetings and town hall meetings. We compare, and some of these people are in the same meetings and some people aren't. Like, maybe one person from that other meeting will be in this one, maybe two, but it's not necessarily the same group of people that go from meeting to meeting. There's some overlap. But we're the same eight that go to every meeting.
Right.
And we'll sit there and we're chatting with each other, and we'll also put in the comments of whatever town hall it is, we'll comment, because we will know that in the last meeting we sat in yesterday, the state official said something different. And now this person is saying something different. And then the meeting that 3 days ago, somebody said something different. And it's like, wait a second. Either someone didn't get the memo, or someone is just thinking on their toes, you know, and just making something up to make it sound good for the town hall. Or they just don't know. Like, they truly don't know what the other agency or the other level is doing. And this is what we're doing. We don't know that they're doing that. And then it's counterproductive, because it's not seamless, and they're not helping each other.
Well, you know, I always thought of Montgomery County as a Tocquevillian paradise, that there was such a dense network of civic associations. And in Montgomery County and Maryland, really, that dense network has provided a ballast for when, you know, governments have not lived up to their promise. It seems like it has happened again with the vaccine hunters, and that you have stepped into the breach and you have filled the gap. I want to say thank you, and I hope to continue this conversation going forward. What lessons should we draw from my conversation with vaccine hunters Tania Aguilar and Becky Taylor? You've heard this before, but it is worth reiterating. COVID has exposed systemic racism in our public health system. And even though the county's public health department is led by two African-American doctors, the problem is really larger than them. Public officials often need help from fresh voices like those of Becky Taylor and Tania Aguilar to bring about reform. We may elect officials, but the task of bringing about change does not stop with electing them. Democracy is not an episodic sport, but a continuous rigor. Second, coordination across levels of government and across its agencies is difficult. This is by design. The checks and balances system distributes power so that no single authority can become authoritarian. The flip side of this is that it takes great leaders to provide coordination across those levels and agencies, and that it is not guaranteed. Third, the vaccine hunters present a very interesting phenomenon. When the government flounders, civil society steps up to fill that breach. But this only happens when there is pre-existing social capital. It is no surprise that the kayak mamas became the vaccine hunters, that the initiative was born in a single high school, Sherwood, before it spread elsewhere, that all the vaccine hunters are Montgomery County public school teachers. And just to make a fine point of it, both Becky and Tanya studied political science in college. Equally, we know that where social capital is missing, government services will be missing too. Becky and Tanya are very clear about the roots of our vaccination failures going back years and decades. Lastly, knowledge is power, and hence the vaccine hunters' recommendation that they want better signage at vaccine dispensation locations. I'll be back with Andrew Sondry and his upcoming report. Hey, Andrew, how are things up county?
Hey, Sunil. Great, thanks for asking. This week, I'd like to talk about the COVID-19 memorial in Black Hill Regional Park, which was erected last summer by local artist Chris Wickman to honor those lost to the deadly virus. Right now, the memorial is in jeopardy because the Park Service is debating over whether or not it should be taken down because it was unauthorized. The surrounding community has spoken out to express how important it is to us that we preserve the memorial. I think it's also important to note that it's made entirely of stones and soil found in the park.
How can I find it?
It's very close to the intersection between the Hamilton and Hard Rock trails. So you turn right onto the Hard Rock Trail, and then it'll be on your right, about 40 feet or so off the path, and it's visible through the trees. The pyramid's about 3 feet tall, and it's got a little wooden plaque with it, and it reflects light because it's made of quartz. So Chris has some ideas about when the best time to visit is.
In general, I mean, year round, the best time is going to be around midday from the south because it is aligned with the sun. And so you're going to get a lot of good reflection midday off the south face.
Yeah.
But some people hike in the morning, some in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And so I'll be looking at, you know, when's the best time of year and actually how far away you are, because actually the sun angle changes and your eye level with the pyramid and where you are in the woods is different. So it's not always obvious when's the best time to get the brightest reflection off of it. So I'm going through the math now. I've got this big spreadsheet and it's kind of interesting.
As it is the only COVID memorial in the county, I would like to take a moment to invite all of our friends from the Down County to come up and visit. We also have some of the most beautiful parks up here, from Black Hill Regional Park to Seneca Creek State Park to the Agricultural History Farm Park to Little Bennett Regional Park and so many more. I suspect that the cherry blossoms are also going to be especially beautiful this year. And you don't even need to leave Montgomery County to see them. I know that Kenwood in the Down County is well known for its cherry blossoms, but there's also a lovely walk along Waters Landing Drive in Germantown. There's a whole row of cherry blossom trees. Beautiful.
Spring in the Washington, D.C. region is incredible because of the cherry blossoms. But this year, soon after, we are getting brood X of the cicadas. After 17 years, they're expected to put on quite a show. Are you ready, Andrew?
You know, last time they came, I was in the third grade. So yeah, I'm ready. I'm also ready, by the way, for daylight savings time. So don't forget to switch your clocks ahead an hour on Sunday, March 14th.
And if you have story ideas for Andrew, please reach out to him on Twitter at Andrew Sondry or by email at sondry.andrew@gmail.com. That's Sondry like laundry with an S. Thanks, Andrew. See you next time.
I want to thank the guys at Ed's Not Dead Podcast for pointing me to this journey into podcasting, and AJ Campbell for early help, including making the look art. Our music comes from the local band Soul Witness.
I'm very much looking forward to showcasing local talent and especially local music students on the podcast. If you want to share your music on the show or know someone who might want to do it, please email us at ihppod@gmail.com or reach out on Twitter at ihppod. I hope you will subscribe and share the podcast as we bring you stories about politics close to you and your home. See you next time.